Hey everybody, on today's episode of Holding Priority, our second podcast, we're going to go over our experience at Command Fest.
Command Fest, too much fun.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. Just kind of do an overview of what we wanted to discuss. We're going to go over the events, kind of our experience and a little bit of survival one-on-one for these types of events. And then kind of discuss all of the cool stuff we got and all the cool stuff we could have gotten.
For sure.
So just to start off with the events, we had a lot of fun at the events. So the first one that we ended up doing was one at 9:30 in the morning, which was pretty early. but it was the Mini Masters event.
And to me, I thought that this was going to be one of like a ticket grabber, so I didn't expect to have as much fun as I initially did with it.
Yeah, so a big part of these types of events is whenever you go, there's a prize ball with a whole bunch of tickets, and if you grind out the events, you can get some really cool stuff. Like you can get entire booster boxes, all kinds of stuff like that. Normal stuff, but then there's things that you literally can't buy. Like giant cards, like they had giant Mana Crypt, giant Black Lotus, or not Black Lotus, Jewel Lotus, and you could also get uncut printed card sheets. So you definitely want to get as many tickets as you can if you're going over those exclusive items, because literally you cannot buy them. You have to get them through tickets.
Or the value is exponential if you're trying to get it like on eBay or something.
Yeah.
Also, it gives you kind of something to shoot for as you're playing all of these events and things.
Yeah. And the Mini Masters, unfortunately, we didn't, it wasn't very clear when you did an event, like what the prize structure was like. But as far as just like enjoyment, Mini Masters was a lot of fun.
It was probably my favorite as far as not Commander.
Yeah. So as far as the Mini Masters, what we would do is you'd sit down, you'd get paired with somebody, you'd get a single pack, and then you'd get three of each land. So there's five colors, three lands, you'd get 15 lands. So your deck realistically would be half lands, half cards. You would take the art card out, the token card out. I think if you got a land, you would keep that in.
Yeah, I just threw mine in and kept it rolling.
Yeah. And then it was standard format, seven cards, 20 life, and you and that person just kind of duked it out. It was single elimination, right? So if you lost the first round, you didn't get to play anymore?
Yeah, it was okay. Three rounds though, so yeah. You would do your three, best two out of three.
Yes, as someone that went to the finals, I don't know what happened to people that weren't as good at it, so I can't speak to that experience.
Personally, I thought it was going to be, you know, swing out and win. But with Thunder Junction, there's quite a bit of interaction in it and a lot of combat tricks you can do, and it ended up being really fun to me. Like, I had a good time.
Yeah, the bonus sheet kind of made or broke the first round. It really depended if you got any type of interaction with the bonus sheet. I did pretty well. I never got a rare worth mentioning in any of my rounds. I really think that first round is, I'm not going to say a coin flip. You know, there's definitely skill that goes into drafting, but if you would lose the first round, I don't really think a lot of it was within your control.
I would argue that RNG had a pretty big part. Like, if you've got a lot of artifacts, the chances of your win rate, I feel, went up just because you could use those lands for anything.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of really good, like, swing artifacts, like creature-ish things you could go in with. And that ultimately, that's what lost me the thing.
Yeah, and also, like, you have five colors, and you're really just hoping that you can put something together with what hand you got. I will say that the thing that got me through pretty well was everybody had to have five colors in the beginning. But the moment, so whenever you won, you got a second pack that you would shuffle into your deck. And at that point, you would go to a 40-card deck, I believe. And my goal was one of my colors needs to leave. Like, even if my deck is not as good, at least it'll be more consistent. I feel like that's what we need at this point. And then when I got my third pack, I was really trying to get down to three colors. I don't think I got there, but just moving out, like picking a color and moving it out, helped a lot.
It did. I went sans green. So it I took out a lot of things that cost a lot of mana and just tried to do those quick pings in. And it did well, but unfortunately the other guy had quite a bit more interaction.
Yeah, and then I did get to the final round, which was the third round. So I ended up getting three packs for $7, you know, which is good. And then the final round, you just played for a single pack. I was kind of hoping that the final round, instead of playing for a pack, I would get like 200 tickets, 300 tickets. But I understand with free entry, $7 packs are already really good. So I definitely get why they didn't give any tickets out at this event. Also, just for whenever we bought our tickets, as far as like 3-day event, it was $170, I believe. But it did come with three constructed event tickets and one Mini Masters ticket. So that Mini Masters ticket was included and you had to burn it either Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. So I'm not usually somebody that would be attracted to the draft format. And even though I do not really like draft format, I still had a lot of fun, which kind of says something about the Mini Masters event.
It was definitely something that was new to me. And at the end of it, I was happy I did it. I think the biggest thing for me is if it had like 100 or 200 tickets, it would have been, you know, something I would have done more than once.
Yeah. And the thing about the Mini Masters is it only happened once a day and it started at 9:30. So I think it would have been a good way to kind of get people in where they're like, yeah, we know that this event per dollar is very valuable, but that makes sure that a lot of people show up at 9:30 and actually play. And then stay the entire day, which I think was a good format and a good call on their part. The other event that we had a lot of fun with was Commander 64. We played two of those. We used a ticket each on the first one, and we actually had enough fun on Sunday that we were like, no, we want to pay for another round.
This was the closest thing to tournament style. And you were given a coin that was just awesome. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, the coin was really cool. They really went all out. So it was a very, like, it wasn't a cheap coin. Like, it didn't feel like pressed aluminum. Like, it was a heavy coin. It had Command Fest on it. It said Dallas and it said 2024. So it was a keepsake that you could always have. And on one side, there was a treasure. And on the other side, I think it was the Planeswalker symbol.
Yeah.
So they really, design-wise, they were like, we are players. We know what people want. It was a cool award. And also, like, it was a big ticket draw. Like, if you ended up winning the Commander 64 tournament, I think you got 1,200 tickets, right?
It was 1,200 tickets. If you went to each pod, which was kind of not clear. I wish it would have been a little more clear that you got 1,200 tickets if you won the whole thing, including the ones you got in your pods.
Yeah, and for context, to kind of put those tickets in perspective, around 10 tickets were comparable to a dollar. So it was like you were winning $120. And the prizes that you really wanted, like the big cards, they started at $1,400. So you could do this one event, win it all, and then be very close to a big prize, which was really cool.
Yeah, I think what happened, honestly, is the guys that won those pods initially did it every day. So they played every one, and if you won two of them, you could get a big card.
Yeah, I don't remember if they had it on Friday. If they did, we skipped it, which doesn't sound like something we would have done. But also, like, we were really thrilled to be there. So, but it's called Commander 64 because it capped at 64 players. Day one, we were pretty close. Saturday, we were pretty close to the 64 cap. The way that the rounds worked were you would get put in a pod and only the winner would go on. So it was single elimination, which kind of hurts in CDH because, you know, it's very possible you lose your first round and then you go on to get to the finals. But in the interest of keeping it not an entire day event, I felt like it was a really good format because it was 64 down to 32, down to 16, down to 4. So it was more of a half day event, but you still felt like you did the whole thing. My experience in it, even though it was not a great experience, I still had a lot of fun. So the first day, I ended up getting at a table with me, and I thought it was going to be more of a casual event, so I didn't bring my, like, sweatiest CDH deck. I brought Grawlnok, which I'm kind of brewing right now. And then across from me was a Kindred zombie deck, and then there was a Kindred dinosaur deck, and then the other guy had Tibbet, and he started with saying that he was borrowing the deck and he didn't know what he was doing, and then immediately went on to raffle everybody, and the people across from me didn't understand that if you kept a flying blocker up, which, I mean, good luck with a flying blocker and a zombie deck and a dinosaur deck. They also kept giving him treasures for the voting, and clearly, you know, Tibbet went off. And then my second round, literally all I got was one turn, and I laid a Chalice of the Void at zero because I was going against Drago, and I knew that there would be a lot of zero rocks that would get sacrificed. And this dude literally played through it because he was able to turn two, everybody else's turn one, peer into the abyss himself, and play through the Chalice of the Void to win, which was cool. You know, like, he deserved it.
So, in my experience, before, as we were signing up, I asked the guy that was getting all of our information, is this more casual? And he was pretty much like, play your best deck. And I was like, awesome. So I went into it with Blue Farm, and I initially thought that I would have a lot of upset players. This wasn't my experience. My first pod was a bit casual. I believe it was Obnixis.
Casual deck.
Obnixis. I can't really remember the other two. They were more casual. However, you know, Obnixis is one of those decks that gets big really quick, and then now you're trying to get rid of a, you know, 8/4, 8/10 flyer, and I won that one through a Thassa line. And my second pod in that event, so the first one we were in, was pretty much all CEDH. And I lost it, but it was more of an RNG thing. The guys played really well. I seen them in the second event as well. So it was one of those things that, you know, they were clearly in the same boat. Matter of fact, I think the round I lost the first time, or in the first tournament, the second one, the guy that was in the pod with me was in top four. So definitely the first day was a bit more casual. The second was quite a bit more competitive. And all around, just pretty much fun. I will say at the end of it, there would be three blue farm players.
Yeah, yeah.
So you would think that, you know, it was a full casual event, but it wasn't. To me, it was the most CEDH thing we did, which was pretty fun.
Yeah, and it's cool because, like, for context, we go to a lot of different events around Texas, like, and Louisiana. If it's within 4 hours, we're kind of willing to go. And Dallas is kind of a big, surprisingly, Dallas is like kind of a big CEDH community. Houston, not so much, but there is about a dozen people that if there is a big event and we go, we will see them. So it was really cool to kind of just show up and be like, all right, well, yeah, let's do this Commander 64 event, and then look at all of the entries and go, oh, this is a real CEDH event. Like, the people that we're kind of used to playing, we know top 16, we can fill top 16 if we all get there.
It was really funny seeing these guys peppered throughout the event.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they get up. Almost every pod you see them get up, and it's like, okay, they must have won in that pod.
Yeah, we had a full CDH pod turn two. We had one guy that clearly borrowed, his girlfriend came over and gave him the Atraxa deck. He'd never played, and it was the ETB Atraxa, but it was ETB Atraxa, me, that new, I always forget his name, it's the guy from Kamigawa, the Azorius commander that's all about, like, bouncing artifacts. He did fall out of, like, CEDH, and he's more of a Brewer deck, but he was there, and then Drago Timna, so I was just like, oh, this is gonna be sweaty, and it was. I didn't even get a turn two. It was fun, though. Like, it was really cool to see. I really like seeing those really sweaty CEDH pods, and if I'm gonna lose, you know, losing turn one is pretty fun to see if somebody can pull it off.
Yeah, that's like, he's going to talk about that for a while, you know, on turn one.
I think the Azorius guy, even, he laid something that every single time the guy played something, I think it was even Rhystic Study. I think we saw turn one Rhystic Study, and the guy had to play through that and a Chalice of the Void. So, and he did, which was really cool. And then as far as the rest of the event, there were free play tables that you could just say, well, there's two ways to do it. There was a looking for group section where you just sat down. If it was just you, if it was you and a friend, you'd sit down and people would come up to you and say, like, oh, hey, you know, I want to play. And it was really cool because we've been to a couple of events where, like, the casual community and the CDH community, like, there's not a lot of good communication. So, like, people will be like, okay, I'd like to play. And then they'll sit down, and then it's just like blue farm and a sweaty deck. And then this person has, like, you know, a goblin, like white red goblin, so or something that they're trying.
Yeah. Just clear fun deck for them.
Yeah. And we had a couple people that came up and we were like, hey, we do play CEDH. You know, you're welcome to sit down. And then they'd be like, oh, no, that's not for me. And I felt like it was a very good experience because, like, people were very honest if they didn't want to play CEDH. And as CEDH players, we understood. We did have a couple of people that were just like, I'm interested in CEDH. We do play casual, but we would like to see, you know, that. And for the most part, if it's kind of two casual decks and two CEDH events, it's, or like two casual decks and two CEDH decks, it's kind of an unwritten, like, oh, okay, I'm going to go after the other CEDH deck and we're going to blow each other out to where the casual players will just kind of be left unchecked. And it's still possible to win through all that.
And they get to see some of the interaction and choices, mm-hmm. I guess. I would say that's a big thing is to me, there's certain choices that CEDH are more apt to pick than a casual player. Like, I'm going to pay Heuristic, or I'm going to pay your,
yeah.
you know. And shout out to those guys that we played. Just fun all around.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had, like, we'll discuss this in the Creator Clash, but we had quite a few people play casual with us, and they were just like, it was a blast to see you guys play, you know, which I thought was really cool. We don't have that experience here locally. And it was pretty fun because the specific guys that sat down to play with us, we saw them in another event. I think we saw them in the Mini Masters. So they thought it was cool that everybody was on even playing ground, which was cool. And then I had built Brawlnok, who is just literally Simic Frog. Like, I don't think it's going to be my tournament deck, but I do think it's fun and sweaty, and it's something new for people to play. And he actually had a Brawlnok deck on him, and he thought it was really cool to see a CDH version. And then we all decided to play casual, and we borrowed their decks, and he gave me his Brawlnok deck, and I was able to play his version of the deck.
Yeah, it was... It was definitely interesting, the interaction between the players. It was a more welcoming experience than I'm used to, which was real
fun. Yeah, and like that guy had a lot of fun seeing someone else play his deck that might know more interactions or might see cards in different ways than he did. And he was just like, oh, that's cool, you did that. I think we're good to move on to Creator Clash.
Creator Clash was something I was really looking forward to.
Yeah. I usually don't drop names whenever I talk about people that I've played with, but we really, really wanted to play Lewis Stardust or Comedian. So first day, the worry about Creator Clash was you just queued with a random creator. And then you could use two tickets or $20 to play, which is pretty good. You know, the games are not timed. They come and they sit with you and they play as long as you need. There's no like 30 minutes and we tie type of deal. It's they sit down. It could be a really long game. It could be a short game. My fear was doing a Creator Clash. And I'm somebody that watches and listens to a lot of podcasts. I consume a lot of Magic content because I work from home. And my fear was we got matched with somebody that I would have no idea who they were. And the first creator, I did not know who they were.
I would say I didn't know who they were. However, it was a really fun time. Like, they were a really good sport, super energetic, real fun to play with, honestly. Like,
And we had so we had gone up and we had said, like, hey, you know, we're CDH, and the guy at the ticket booth was just like, okay, well, the creators can match your power level, and we were like, okay, cool, you know, we just wanted to put that out there. And then the creator that we got matched with had a mono black Tiny Bones deck. And then the the random person. So we had queued as a group, and then the random person, they had a enchantment-based Vant Commander or Planeswalker deck.
Staxy.
Yeah, it was not to be rude. It didn't do anything the entire game. So they tried to set up a whole bunch of Stax pieces, and it was cool to see some of them. Like one of them was every instant or sorcery you cast is countered unless you play X, which is its casting cost. So, you know, if you want to do a counter spell, for the most part, you're going to pay 6. And even if you did a free spell, like let's say Fierce Guardianship, you had to pay 3 for Fierce Guardianship. So it was like Trinisphere on steroids. And they had also, and we didn't let them get that one off, but they'd also put something down that was only one land untapped. It was going to be quite a slog.
I think that was the big turning point in it, where I was like, okay, all of my spells cost X amount more. Now I'm only untapping one land. Like this has got to be dealt with.
Yeah.
Like we need to psych rift it or something.
Yeah. And I think we were both in the same boat. We both could have pushed and ended the game very quickly, but we're having a lot of fun. The creator, even though I didn't know who they were, they really brought a lot of life to the game, a lot of energy, and it was clear why they were in the business that they were in. Like they took a table that could have been a kind of miserable experience and really made sure everybody had some fun. We did our part too. Like we definitely made sure that there not a single person just got the brunt of all of our interaction. There were times where I could literally clear the entire table and I was just like, that card you have, that's kind of fun. I'll leave it there.
Yeah.
It was a fun game. We did kind of have a not great experience with the third person that queued in. He got pretty upset that Blue Farm won through Brain Freeze loop.
Yeah, Bruce whined it. Yeah.
And there were some obscenities said, which was kind of awkward. And
well, I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, in casual, that's something that happens, where everybody's kind of having a good time until somebody wins. However, you know, it was one of those things where I had an opportunity. It was time to go ahead and try to end it. I think we had been playing maybe like 30, 40 minutes.
We're getting close to an hour. And it was time. The other thing was the creator was trying to do a TikTok video where they all did like a dance in their cosplay. Oh, creator, dressed like Tiny. Super cool.
That was definitely,
over that.
Yeah. Definitely one of the key points and a reason why we are, more biased towards her. She was little tiny bones running around.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. But we were an hour in and the guy played an enchantment that we could only untap one land. And I think I had enough that I just Cyclonic Rift the entire table and then somewhat cleared the way for Blue Farm to win. But I mean, I'd had as much fun as I'd had. I didn't want to play a game where we only untapped one land and passed for the next hour. But the only reason I bring it up was because we specifically asked to be queued as CDH. And while we had a lot of fun, I definitely understand that the other person, they should not have been as sour, but like I could understand being disappointed by the experience, even though we tried to do as much as we could to make it fun. And then the second day, we decided to do it again. And we were like, I know that you just get matched with a random creator. I had a lot of fun, even though it could have been like kind of a negative experience, but like, let's do it again. And we had seen Lewis Stardust and Comedian walking around and we sat down. We had found somebody that they were in line behind us, and they went to queue with us, and they had a Niv-Mizzet deck, which was definitely a casual Niv-Mizzet deck, but they were hyped. Like, they were like, I get to see CDH. I'm really interested in it. We had had a discussion with them about proxies after, because they had so much fun. And we're just kind of sitting, waiting for our random creator. They don't tell you who it was. And then Lewis Stardust sits down, and I was just like, ah.
It was strategic on my part. Anytime we play in the same pod, I try to sit across from him, so he's not able to see my cards or read me very well. Just because in general, we play so much together that he's able to catch small signs of me maybe having a good card or whatnot. But it was not exactly planned that Lua would be right next to him, I guess.
Yeah, and just for context, I have a really good memory to where if I accidentally see a flash of somebody's hand, for the most part, my brain captures a picture, and I will remember a lot of the hand, if not all of it. And I definitely try not to look at people's hands, but it happens. And because I play him so much, it's pretty detrimental if I know the entire hand that he has. So it is strategic. But, you know, I was thrilled to be playing with a CDH content creator. And then Lua Stardust and Comedian, above all, you know, favorites. And she sat down, she pulled out Winota, which, again, cool, you know.
Definitely. Like, I would say it was, I was trying to hold back some of the butterflies so much of just nervousness and whatnot.
Yeah, right. I was excited.
she sat down and like a few minutes later, Comedian walks over and she's like, well, I've got to go do something real quick. Would you mind just kind of standing here for a second? And awesome. Yeah.
and he full on, you know, was not even really being paid to play with us. I don't really know like how that works, but he could have just been like, I'm going to sit here and literally hold down the fort. And was really cool, like very engaging. I talked to him about, you know, podcasts. I had been a nerd and I prepared some questions if we had met him, and I completely spaced out in the moment. I wanted to ask him specifically what he contributes his win rate to the most. I know he does CDH coaching, so I didn't want to encroach on that and ask him a bunch of questions for free. But it was a really cool experience to sit down and talk to this person about, you know, our podcast, how their experience with podcasts, you know that we were a fan without fanning too much, and then get to talk to the two people that we're the most excited to meet.
Yeah, definitely. I think we did two creator clashes. Both were really awesome in their own way.
Yeah.
It was really interesting to see the Winota deck run through, like going as far as some of the stacks and stuff.
Yeah, I played Grawlnok, who is Simic, and that deck cannot run basic lands because of Hermit Druid. And there was a Magus of the Moon played that came out on a Winota flop, and I was just like, there are a lot of stacks. Winota is doing the thing. I need to be able to play, so unfortunately, I'm going to have to overload a Cyclop Rift, which for some reason never works out for me. However, it had to happen. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. You know, again, a Blue Farm ticket. Really cool to interact with people. Everybody was a lot of fun. I think everybody was kind of over the moon that they were playing these big names in Magic, and it was so approachable too. You know, two tickets that we got with the event were $20 a person, And I believe some of it was going to Second Life as well. Maybe not, but there was a way to contribute to the charity for raffles in that same area, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, for sure. And there was quite a few creators. Like, we're only really speaking on three of them, but there was whole section of you know, people there.
Yeah, and it was cool because they were all interacting with each other, even in different pods. And I consumed quite a bit of Magic content, and I knew a majority of the creators, which I thought was really cool. I think that's it for events. You want to move on to kind of our overall experience and how to survive during events?
So this one was probably the easiest we've been to.
Yes.
We've went to a few different conventions and tournaments and things, and just the hotel itself, where it was located, it was in the hotel. So our room was on the 10th floor-ish, so we would just get down the elevator, walk 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
We're there.
Yeah, and it was really cool because we had bumped into quite a few creators in the hotel room or, you know, at one of the restaurants. Like, even when we were just kind of on our downtime, we were still bumping into a lot of creators. So it was like, even when we weren't at the event, we were still at the event. And for context, I have built a bug out bag that goes into my game bag, and I'm used to carrying quite a bit around whenever I go to conventions. Like, they're usually hot. There's a lot of like sweaty bodies in there. Not to like go into everything, but I have a neck fan, you know, protein bars. I make sure that I carry deodorant because it gets sweaty. Like, even if you start the day feeling fresh, you can within a couple hours live in a swamp like Shrek, just to not be gross. But
also, Magic players, you know, yeah, we're not the best known for, you know, deodorant hygiene. So yeah, that's something that I initially take into consideration every time I go to a place as well.
But yeah, I mean, at least not like Yu-Gi-Oh, where they had to make a rule called Dirty Duelist. but it's yeah, it can get gross. And then I also like just bring, you know, things to brush my teeth, just random things. You get really dehydrated sometimes. Like, I do bring electrolyte packs. But it was really interesting because day one, I had my big bag and it was pretty heavy. It's not too bad. Usually what we're doing is we have a hotel near the event. We try to get the closest one there. Usually we do a 10 to 15 minute walk with that heavy stuff, and then I'm lugging it around the entire day, and I'm always very glad to have it, but it is heavy. And this one was cool because, like, we have the hotel. There were times where I got a little overwhelmed with like the amount of sounds that were there, and I was able to go up to the hotel room, take a 30 minute break, watch King of the Hill, drop some of my stuff off, grab some of the stuff that I wanted signed that I'd forgot. I never had that anxiety of like, oh no, did I load everything up? There was nice, cool water everywhere. The AC was great. It was very comfortable, even with, you know, 200 bodies in the room.
That was my thing. Like, there was ice water the entire day.
Yeah.
And then the restrooms weren't just funky. Because sometimes we'll go to a place and, like, there's one restroom for, you know, bunches of people to go to. This one was fairly good.
Yeah.
There was also the AC, like you mentioned. It wasn't hot. Like, normally they'll have, like, fans or something, but just the AC itself was comfortable.
Yeah, and also, like, with the restroom, the event is 80% male, if not more. So we have gone to events where there's one bathroom within walking distance and there's three toilets that are sit-down toilets. So, like, if you gotta go in there and get some major work done, you're standing in line with quite a few people because there's three toilets and probably 200 people there. But this one was great. Like huge bathroom, like event bathroom. It was set up really, really well. And it was cool because it was in the hotel itself. So there was no going outside. We didn't have to see like the sun, which is great. You know, if you're a Magic player, like not seeing the sun.
I think that it was all contained was a big thing too. Mm-hmm. Like, our whole experience was contained in the hotel, which was, it was nice to get up in the morning, walk down, be playing Magic, and then get tired, go back up, hit lunch or something, come back down.
Yeah, and there was a express food place to where if you just wanted to grab a salad and eat real quick and go back, you could do that. And on the second floor, there were multiple restaurants that you could sit down and they would just charge it to the room. And the food was fantastic. Like, usually hotel food, I'm thinking that I'm going to spend a lot. And it was a little bit more than a normal restaurant, but the food quality was there. It was really good.
Yeah, it was delicious.
Yeah, and then just, you know, overall about our experience, the event was run very well. I think it was kind of intended that you didn't know how many tickets that you were getting per event or the prizes, just because I don't think they really wanted somebody sitting there and planning and min-maxing and going like, okay, this is the money I have. How can I get the most tickets out of it? I think that was strategic, and there were tons of judges. I think we were able to sit there and count, and I think we went up to 13, and there were still more judges somewhere floating around. And it was cool because the events were well-staffed with the judges, and also if you were playing in the free areas, they made sure that they were kind of combing those, and it was a cool experience to be like, hey, you know, I'm playing a free pickup game, but we ran into a question. I can call a judge over, and this free game that we have a question on,
get a ruling.
Yeah, like what was the one that we had asked? I think it was somebody had sawn in half a 1/1.
Oh yeah, if you saw in half a 1/1, does it kill the creature completely, or do you get 2 1/1s?
Yeah.
Which I believe the ruling was you get 2 1/1s.
Yeah.
Which I was pretty sure.
Because it says round up. The person thought that you would get 2 0-0s because it would be fractional. But if you're rounding up, it's a 1/1. I had remembered that, this is a little off topic, but on a Playing With Power video, somebody had sawed in half their Sarah Angel. And I forgot that Sarah Angel buffs itself, and saw in half is not the original power and toughness, it's the current power and toughness.
Yeah, and Sarah's Ascendant is initially a 1/1.
Yeah.
And it had to
do a 6/6. Yeah. So that person turned their 6/6 Sarah, like Angel in, or not Sarah, Sarah's Ascendant. They had turned that into a base power 3/3 and 2 8/8s, which I thought was really cool. But yeah, that was a really cool experience too.
Yeah. All in all, it was very comfortable most of the time. I think that it was really interesting in how well they had access to the judges.
Yeah.
Also, they were kind of nerding out too.
Oh yeah. We were doing some free games, and I know at least two had seen that we were kind of a CDH pod, walked by, saw that I had a frog as a commander, and they were like, what is that? and they were all having fun too. I think just as far as like, we'll probably do a podcast more on our like survival experience, but I would say for this particular event, I'm really glad that we went as a group and not as a single person. I think a single person could still have fun at the event, but going with at least one more person was really cool because they made sure to queue everybody together. And also we could pool our tickets for a big prize. I think if you're a single person, I don't think you could get one of those big prizes, because he would really spend the event grinding the tickets out. And then by the time he got enough tickets to get one of the big cards or one of the uncut sheets, they'd be gone. That was kind of our experience. Was the Commander 64 event was the last event. Everybody had pretty much closed around the time that the final round started. And even though we had enough tickets for maybe a big card, by the time we had got the tickets, all of the cards were gone.
Yeah, everybody was flooding in.
Yeah.
Well, I was still in the event, actually, and I was like, you know, I want to get me a big card. But I was noticing very quickly that the lines towards the ticket area were getting quite substantial. And by the time we had finished, there was, it was slim pickings for the most part.
And I would say you can have fun as a single person, but you are going to exponentially improve that going with at least one other person. If you can get a whole pot of four together to go, I think that would be ideal.
Yeah, for sure. I will say that we did meet up with a buddy that's from the area.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of laughed at him the first few days. I was like, you know, man, that's a lot of stuff you're carrying around.
Yeah, he was wheeling and dealing.
However, after talking with him a bit, I was like, that makes a lot of sense, because he's getting rid of some of his bulk rares and bulk, just in general cards, trying to get better upgrades and whatnot.
Yeah. But
definitely one of those things that I didn't think about. I don't think I would want to carry, you know, half of my collection to try to get traded in or whatever. However, that option was something I didn't necessarily think about.
It was really cool, because I'd never thought about this, but there were quite a few people from the group that we normally see that they apparently do the events a lot. And their goal is, whenever they finish the event, to make enough money to net the event was free. So they had, a lot of them had brought in some cards. They were selling off their tickets, selling off their the free tickets and also the tickets that they won from doing events. They were trying to win prize wall tickets to get big cards that they could turn around and as a group sell and split up to make the event free. And that, you know, to me, that had never entered my mind. So I thought it was cool that if you're somebody that, you know, the cost of the event is a problem, I would say, like, you know, don't gamble on making your money back, but it is possible that you would go into the event, do everything, have a lot of fun, and then come out net negative money-wise. So it's not as big of a hit on your wallet.
Or positive, depending.
Yeah.
Like I said, I initially was making fun of our friend. However, he, not rudely, but just kind of joking with it. However, he ended up really making some great deals, actually.
Yeah.
And I was like, man.
Yeah. It was enough to where I came home and I organized my collection, because I regretted, I usually go in with like a work taking a plane trip mindset because of MagicCon, and I didn't think, oh, I could literally load up my bulk rares, end up getting a whole bunch of really cool cards with trade-in, because I don't really care too much to take the money. What I want is, I want to turn all of my bulk rares in a cool secret layers or like full arts and stuff like that. And I really wish I would have taken the time to do that before. I was just, you know, beelining for great experience, and I did have a great experience, but it would have been really cool to walk in with a whole bunch of cards that I didn't really care about, and then walk out with like one really big card I've had my eyes on for a while.
The selection, we probably didn't mention it too much, but the selection of the vendors was supreme. Like, yeah, they had great stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I think at one point we counted the, was it the Ragavans? and there was four of them there. Yeah. I was like, oh my god.
So the secret layered clash ragavans, there's 32 printed, and there were 4 in cases there. So I think it was an 8th, if my math is correct.
It was interesting to see them there. Pretty much anything you wanted. There was one card I was looking for that I didn't find. However, everything else was there that I kind of wanted. That card being Secret Lair of Thassa's. But
yeah, and all of the cards were comparable to TCG prices, if not less, because the tax was included and you weren't paying shipping. So like, if you were looking for a card, you could pick it up at TCG player sticker price, not have to pay tax. So you're saving 8% there. And then if there was shipping too, which I mean, it was cool that there wasn't a markup, and they were still taking trades in. I think that this is probably a good segue into kind of our final topic, just the event loot, all the cool things you could have gotten. We went over the prize walls, the prize wall and the coins, but we didn't even talk about the artists or all of the rare cards too much.
And that was the first thing I did.
Yeah.
Got into the event and walked straight to, I think it was Aaron Miller that was there.
To get your Chrom
signed. Yeah, to get my Chrom signed and a buddy's. However, we didn't even mention that.
Literally was just like, oh my god, like one of the biggest draws we didn't even mention. That's how much fun we had. Like, it's overwhelming in a good way. So we had gotten there early Friday, and it was really cool because like everybody was set up and the artists were all there, and I just thought, can I just knock out all of my signatures? I've been playing Rocco a lot recently, and one of the artists, and I forget his name because I'm a terrible person, but he was the Rocco that I use. He was there. He had also done Food Chain, also did a Full Art Lightning Greaves, and a couple other cards. I think maybe that was the guy that did Rogue's Eye too. Oh, and Drown and Lock. Yeah. The Drown Lock. I have his final sketch that I won on an auction for pretty cheap, and he was there. And I immediately beelined over. It was pretty cheap. It was like, I wanted to get a really nice signature. You get a just normal one for like $3, I want to say, per card. And they take a while. They spend a lot of time on them. I got a really cool one that's a shadow signature. I think that was maybe $5. And then there was a glow in the dark for 10. So I got the glow in the dark, clearly. But it takes them quite a bit of time to do it. I think I was sitting there talking to the guy for probably 30 minutes while he was working on all the signatures, because I have to wait for them to dry, and like they do a really good job. And it was really cool because that same guy, he does Meat Hook Massacre, and the guy behind me was like, hey, my friends would think it's really funny if you signed it and then the hand is open in a way where you could draw like a phallic object in there. And he was like, would you draw a phallic object? And he was just like, for a signature, no, because that would be against the rules. You know, I wouldn't deface a magic card like that as an artist. However, if you would like to purchase a custom sketch for $30 on an artist proof, we could arrange.
That sounds like a funny interaction.
Yeah, it was funny. I thought it was cool that he was just like, let me uphold, you know, the rules and regulations. However, if you want to make this happen,
on a more interesting thing that I didn't think about as far as the artists go, and I may do this in the future. I seen a guy at one of the events, and he had this white mat with some really cool like sketch art on it.
Yeah.
And he was like, my goal is to get each artist to draw a picture on this and have this really cool mat.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, how much does that cost you? And he was like, well, this one, which was a fairly big sketch. It was like $20. I was like, oh my God, like that sounds like a play.
Yeah.
Like, and then if you can get them to sign underneath it, like, I don't know. Personally, I would geek out on that. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there are only 5 artists there. Yeah. And as a CDH player, I probably only care about 5%. Honestly, maybe 2% of the cards ever printed. You know, like, not counting basic lands. Like, there's not a lot of cards that I look at and I go, oh, this would be really cool to get signed for my deck. And with those 5 artists, not counting the tokens that I got signed for, like, mana, I probably got 12 cards signed. I got Rocco, Food Chain, Brobrath, Simeon Spirit Guide, Lightning Greaves. And there were a lot that I could have gotten signed that I just didn't think about, like Goldspan Dragon, the guy that Aaron Miller, you know, he does a lot. Getting Krom signed for Blue Farm is such a flex.
It was nice. I'm not sure which, because I got 2 different Krom signed. I'm not sure which I really like better. I got one that was red blue, kind of split in half like Krom is, but the other, the shadow one, was really nice too. I just really liked them both.
Yeah, and they did like good jobs. Like if you were like sign half of it red, sign half of it blue, they were like, yep, you know, for like 10 bucks, like it was very customizable, which was really cool. Like as someone that I only brought 4 decks, and I did look at the artist beforehand to see like what could I get signed, and I was mostly focused on my current CDH deck, which was Rocco. And I was like, I can get my commander signed and my food chain signed. That's a secret layer food chain. Like, heck yeah. And then just as I was there, I was like, this is really cool. What else can I get signed? I was able to go and pick out some cards. The other thing too is the vendors, you could go buy the cards from them and they weren't really marked up a whole bunch and you get those signed. And the artists themselves, they have artist proofs where it's literally the full Magic card on the front. It doesn't have the rare sticker if it's a rare, and then the back is blank. So you could basically get an artist proof copy signed. And it was the artist proofs varied in prices depending on the card value. You couldn't go like, oh, you know, I want to get this card is really expensive, I'll buy the artist proof and get it signed. They were selling it around there, which they should, you know, they should make that money. And I had gotten a full art Lightning Greaves foil in an artist proof signed. And it was really cool to just be like, oh man, I really want this card. I didn't bring it. I don't see it at any of the vendors, but this guy still has it and I can buy it from him. Like
the vendors were pretty knowledgeable too. Like, so if you were looking for a specific card, let's say, you know, you needed a Lightning Greaves that was made by this specific artist, then they could be like, oh yeah, we got one. Like it was very seamless to do something like that if you wanted to. Not very many lines as far as getting through and grabbing what you need. Like I don't think I stood and waited for a card at all. Like, I think I walked up, looked at it, wanted it. Somebody was already there.
Yeah. In fact, there were times where I was literally just looking and there was someone there attentive to me. And I was like, hey, you know, I'm just looking right now. I might pick some stuff up like tomorrow. And they were like, okay, cool. And then still continue to engage with me. And then the moment there was somebody that, you know, needed a card, they were on point, like very, very good vendors. And it was cool because like there were a lot of people bringing big collections, big ticket cards to trade in. The trade in was about, I'm sure that they adjusted a little bit more for those bigger cards, but it was, if it was store credit, you were getting about 50 to 55 and then 40 to 45 if you were doing cash. So like it was good for them to get the cards, and they were fast at putting them out. Like there are people that put out brought in cool mana crypts, like neonic mana crypts, and then within a couple hours, they were in the case for sale, priced. And I did really like that every single card, for the most part, had a price on it, to where, like, there was no, oh, let me look this up on TCG Player and see how much this is going to hit my wallet. It's like, this card, it's you know, Elvish Spirit Guide is one. I wanted the full art. $11, and it was marked, and I knew it, and it was a real quick trade. Also, all of the prices were tax included, so it wasn't like, this is $11 plus tax, blah, blah, blah. No, it was like, do I have $11 in my pocket?
Cool.
Hand it over, I get the card, we're done. No receipt, you know?
As a customer as well, like, the range of cards was, you know, you could pick you up a $5 card, you could pick you up an $8,000 card. It just depended on really what you were looking for. And it was really cool to see some of those really exclusive, rare cards in person. I think there was maybe four Black Lotus at one point, all in one little section of this vendor. And as far as pickups, you know, I got many really cool upgrades to my deck personally. Oh,
yeah. You're more of a, like, you buy specifically for Blue Farm, and I'm more of a collector. And I think even with me just kind of picking up anything that caught my eye, that was a good price, and you specifically you've upgraded quite a bit, like, on your own. I think we got a really similar amount of upgrades between us, which, I mean, speaks to the selection that you could be like, all right, I'm going to upgrade these five or six cards. And I also just, like, for example, I'm trying to do a Sakashima cosplay of the Secret Lair Sakashima the Imposter. And every vendor had at least one, and I was able to get in foil. Like, I'm picky to where if I'm buying a card, I want to buy it in foil. If it's not one of those old cards where the foil is like 100 times, you know, the value. But I was able to, even with being picky on my upgrades, get a bunch of stuff that I wanted, and also a bunch of stuff that I didn't know that I wanted.
Yeah, the browse shopper had something, and then the specific as well. Like, I picked up a Neon Ink Mana Crypt that I had been eyeballing the whole convention. And it feels real good to look at. Like,
yeah.
I'm not gonna lie. Like, it's one of my favorite.
And you got its brother with the Cavern of Souls, the same color, same everything, which, yeah.
Just nice all around. There was some cards, like I said, the Thassa's I was looking for, but that was one out of 100 cards I was looking at. Like,
yeah, I think it's the Grim Tutor. That's the 3-cost tutor.
Yeah.
Which really, you know, outside of Crick, you're not really going to see a 3-cost sorcery speed tutor in CDH, but there's a specific one that looks like a old gravestone from, like, the early 1900s in foil. It was one of those things where I was just looking, and my eye saw a glimmer, and I was like, is it? That's coming home with me. I do have a Crick deck that I hardly ever play, and I've justified it. It's coming home with me.
Yeah, for sure. It was kind of fun to scavenger hunt a little bit. Like, let's say the Simeon Spirit Guy guide artist was there. I believe it's Lucas. And be like, well, let me see if I can find a Simeon Spirit Guy. And just go over and spend $1. Like, if he didn't have it, he could have had it as well. But
and also for, like, the big collectors, there were lots of masterpiece cards available. Like, I really like Chalice of the Void. If I'm playing a deck that I need to slow people down a little bit, where I'm not playing blue, for the most part, Chalice of the Void is going in. If I'm not doing Alliance on Diamond, just because of how prevalent Blue Farm is, it's good if I drop it turn one, it's good if I feel like a lion's eye diamond combo is going to happen. It stops a lot of shenanigans. So it's one of my more favorite stacks piece cards. And I had the full art from Ixalan that I really liked. And I was walking by and I saw a masterpiece and I was just like, this is very affordable. I've never seen it before. I didn't even know there was a printing of this. This is mine now, you know. and if I would have been thinking, I could have, if I didn't want to hustle, traded in mine that I had for about probably $40 to $50 and then gotten that amount off, and it just be like, I hand my card in, I get $50 off, I get the new one. I do know how to sell on eBay, and I do have like a pretty good score on my account with a lot of sales. So I usually can offload them myself. But for the person that's not interested in that, and I completely understand that, you could literally just trade in a card and then get a big upgrade and get like quite a bit off on it.
All in all, I had really good experience with it. I would say I may bring a few extra cards the next time I go. Hopefully there's another, I hope Cool Stuff does another one as well.
Yeah.
But I would like to see a little more CEDH tailored things. I get that we could kind of integrate into a few events. However, I think that a little section, be it a few tables, would be really fun to do, like a
meditation or something. I liked that whenever we went to Vegas, there was a, you pick up a sign and you say you're looking for competitive, and that kind of gets rid of the awkward conversations that happen. But I think everybody has been mature enough lately that they're like, oh, I don't play CDH. And I, as a CDH player, I'm not offended. Like, I'm not that he's spoke up. Yeah.
It also cuts a lot of in between.
Yeah.
But I had a really good time, honestly, and I think that it was definitely worth going the next time.
Yeah, I mean, as far as my closing thoughts, I had a lot of fun. I'm going to do another one. I'm going to bring a bunch of rares, and, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
But if y'all like content like this, please, you know, hit those buttons.
Yeah, the more feedback we get, the more we see that you guys are enjoying it, the more we'll invest in this, and the more we'll do it. So, you know, I really appreciate it. You know, we're a small creator, and we're trying to get out there. So if you can share and comment and like and all that stuff for free, it'll definitely help us out. So thank you for listening this far, and we'll catch you later.
See ya.